Boker Tov, everybody. We are up to, hope everybody's doing well. It's been a busy week. We had a bar mitzvah for Harel Fisher's bar mitzvah, so mazal tov. We had a meeting last night with Amit parents. So I feel like I was here until 12 o'clock last night. So I'm back here at 7:30 in the morning. Okay, but good stuff, all good stuff. And we're going to learn also, unfortunately, some challenging stuff. We're going to learn the refuah shleima of, does someone have, it's Ayelet HaShachar Bat Shoshana, Bat Shoshana Rachel. So she should have a full recovery. And okay, we got up to Perek Yud Zayin. Okay. I think, yeah, we got up to Yud Zayin. Remember, well, let's just review what happened last time. What happened at the end of last parak? Two things happened. Well, what happened to the beginning of the parak? Who's anointed the new king? Okay, but it's a very secretive anointment. This is not appointment. Who loves whom? Oh, then Shaul loves David. Shaul loves David. He becomes, he starts playing music for him. It suits him. And we spoke about, well, we didn't quite get there, but you see the power of music, okay? And this is a big theme throughout Jewish literature, Sefer Tehillim, right? We all know from an experiential standpoint that you could be in a terrible mood and you hear some song and, you know, that you like, and you're suddenly your energy, you know, totally changes. Music can transport us, remind us of distant memories. And so music is a very powerful force. This is why there was music in the Beit HaMikdash. The Levi'im would sing on a daily basis during the Korbanot. They played instruments as well, Nachon. This is why also there are whole discussions around, for example, Kol Isha. I mean, part of it's because of the power of music. If music didn't do anything, if it didn't inspire or if it didn't grab a person, it wouldn't have the same, you know, I don't think the halakha would be on the books. But so music is a very powerful thing. It can change our mood. And we see, for example, by Shaul HaMelech, what's true of Shaul is true of us in to larger or smaller degrees, that music can change our, right? Whenever you're having a bad day, you listen to your, what it used to be, you had like a CD or you had a playlist, right? On a cassette player or something. That was a long time ago. Now, yeah. Whereas now, nachon, right? You know, and now, you know, you used to like give out in high school, like a cool thing to do to give someone a cassette with your favorite songs, you know. Oh, these are my, you know, greatest hits, you know. And now we could access everything on YouTube or whatever other digital service. So the world has changed, but music is still a powerful thing. So we are up to Perek Yud Zayin. And in Perek Yud Zayin, we're going to have a famous battle, a very famous battle. And we're going to see who that battle is, who's fighting this battle, who's going to win this battle, and what is the significance of this battle.
Excuse me, can I ask you already?
Yeah.
According to this, he's already in the palace, according to what we just read.
Correct.
And now he isn't in the palace. He's a little boy that's sent to his brothers to...
Well, we haven't even started the story yet.
But this,
we're going to get there. Nachon. This is going to be a question which we have to address. Okay. Perek Yud Zayin. Okay. And I want, if I don't remember to do it, Maureen, you'll remind me. Okay. Perek Yud Zayin. Vayasfu plishtim et machanem lamilchama. The Plishtim gathered their armies for war. Vaye asfu socho, asher li Yehuda. They gather in socho, that's part of Yehuda. Vayachanu ben socho uven azeka be'efes damim. They camp between socho and azeka in a place called efes damim. Vishaul v'ish Yisrael ne'asfu vayachanu be'emek ha'ila. And they are, Shaul is in Emek ha'ila. Anybody know where Emek ha'ila is? This is near... So I'm trying to remember, Emek Ayalon and Emek Ayala, I always mix them up.
Yeah,
this is Beit Shemesh. Emek Ayala is Nachon, it's near Beit Shemesh. Nachon. Emek Ayalon is the one, is on the Kvish Achad. Nachon. Okay, so, so what happens? Vayachum lachamal likrat pilishtim. They get ready for war. This is old school warfare. One army's over here, one army's over here, and they're going to go straight at each other and fight. If anyone's seen the movie Braveheart, it's sort of, you know, you capture some of that type of war here. Very brutal, frontal confrontation. Now we have, you know, reconnaissance units who are breaking into homes and helicopters, and they didn't have this back in the day. So,
and remote control.
And remote control. Nachon, drones, that's right. Uplishtim omdim el ahar mizeh, v'Yisrael omdim el ahar mizeh, v'hagai b'neihem. And the plishtim are on one side, the Jews are on the other side, and the ravine is between them. Okay, or valley, ravine. V'yetzei ish ha-b'neihem mimachanot plishtim. Now the champion fighter, okay, goes out from machane plishtim. Goliath shemo. Migat, Goliath from Gat. Okay? Sort of funny. Govo Sheish Amod Vazaret. He's above 6 Amod. He's very, very tall. He's a huge guy. Think of a sumo wrestler, but, you know, that's, but tall and strong and fierce. I don't know. Anyone here watch WWF? You know what that is? Every night. Yeah, I don't watch it either. But those, that's the build of Goliath. So, V'kova nechoshet al rosho. He's got a bronze helmet. V'shiryon kashkashim, a breastplate of armor, of scaled armor. Kashkashim, like scales on a fish also. V'hu lavush. U'mishkal ha'shiryon chameshet alafim shkalim nechoshet. The armor is huge. It's so heavy. Umitzchat nechoshet al raglav. He has bronze, armor also on his legs. Vechidon. He has a javelin nechoshet ben ktefav. Vechidon nechoshet ben ktefav. And he's got a huge, spear, a javelin on his shoulders. Ve'etz chanito kiminor orgim. What do you guys have for the translation there? The chetz anito, anybody have that? So the chetz, the shaft of his spear, kimnor orgim, an oreg is a weaver, is like a weaver's, yeah. So either it's describing how large it is or how sharp. V'lahevet chanito, sheish meot shkalim barzel. The lahevet is like the head of his spear. Was 600 shkalim of barzel of iron. V'nosei atzinah holech lefanav, a shield bearer walking before him. Okay, this is a warrior. This is he's a beast. He's huge. I mean, look at the level of description of his armor. Has anyone here been to the Metropolitan Museum of Art? Yeah, in New York City. No, one. I see one. Years ago, so one of my favorite exhibits there. Besides for the Monets and the Van Goghs and, you know, etc., is that they, if you go in on the main floor and go to the right, there's a huge armor showcase. And you have all these huge, huge armor. And now we know about the medieval knights. I mean, you know, to some degree, this armor was very helpful. It protected you, but you also couldn't move. And it weighed you down. And it was, imagine... You know, we look sometimes at the Charedim, and I say this with almost like, wow, what dedication that they're willing to wear Polish winter garb in the heat of an Israeli summer. Okay? A Bekasha, you know, fur hat, that's meant for a Russian winter in Siberia. Okay? And they wear it here in Me'asherim in the summer. Like, mamash, kol hakavod, that level of dedication. Okay? That's hot. It's really hot. Imagine wearing 80 pounds of armor, metal, you know, attract it conducts heat. Wearing that in the Middle Eastern sun, and you're a crusader, you know, going along the coast from Akko to Gash. I mean, can you imagine how hot it must have been? And to be
maybe it wasn't global warming.
Maybe there was a global warming. That's nachon. It's definitely it was still hot. Nachon, it was still hot. So, now there's a long description here. Now, vayamod vayikra al marachot Yisrael. He then gets up and calls to the ranks, to the soldiers of Israel. Vayomer lehem, lama teitzu larach milchama? Why are you going out to even fight a war? Halo anochi aplishti, v'atem avadim l'sha'ul. I'm the plishti, and you're servants to Sha'ul. Brulacham ish v'ered alai. Choose for you a duel, someone who's going to, you know, will fight against me, and I'll fight him. Im yuchal li lachem iti, if you're even capable of fighting against me, v'yikani, then you'll hit me. V'hayinu lachem la'avadim. Then we will be servants to you. If not, if I overcome him, then you'll be avadim to us. So he's saying, why fight a war? Why waste all this bloodshed? Let's just have the best fighter from each army fight against each other, and then we'll resolve this. Now, is he giving them a good option here?
On the surface, no.
Why not?
Because he's...
No one's going to be able to fight against them. That's one. But two, notice his language. Look how he taunts them. Hinenu, he says, "Atem avadim l'Sha'ul." You guys are avadim l'Sha'ul. You're right now avadim l'Sha'ul. So if they win, they're avadim l'Sha'ul still. If they lose, they're going to be avadim to him and the plishtim. So there's something very condescending here. He's basically suggesting you guys are just slaves with a slavish mentality. And he's not only suggesting, hey, let's resolve this by having a duel, he's also essentially taunting them and putting them down. And as we'll see, this works. Okay? This works. This is what we call, what do we call this today in sports?
Psychological warfare.
Psychological warfare, nachon, or we call it trash talking. Okay? When you know. Okay. V'David ben ish Efrati hazeh. Now, David, who was an Ish Efrati, mi beit lechem Yehuda, ushmo Yishai, from the family of Yishai, velo shmona vanim, and his family has eight children. Va'ish bimei Sha'ul zakein ba va'anashim. And this man, Yishai, was very old. He was coming of age. Coming of age is when you're like 12, 13. He was aging. Okay, he was aging. Va'yelchu sheloshet v'nei Yishai ha'gedolim, halchu acharei Sha'ulem lochama. Three of the older sons go to war with Sha'ul. V'shem shloshet panav asher halchu lemelchama Eliyav habachor, Eliyav, u'mishnehu Avinadav, v'hashlishi Shama. So three of his children go to war. Who does not go to war? David. David HaMelech does not go to war. Okay. So this is going to be significant. David olech v'shav me'al Sha'ul lirot etzon aviv beit lachem. Sha'ul is going back and forth to watch his father's flock. V'yigash ha'plishti ashkem v'arei v'yitatev 40 yom. And the plishti is doing this for 40 days. Every day he goes and taunts the Israeli camp. Okay, so this is a reference for David olech v'shav me'al Sha'ul. And he's going back and forth to help Sha'ul. He has two jobs, right? On the one hand, he's a shepherd still. On the other hand, he is Sha'ul's assistant harpist. Now, I the structure of this story is I think very critical. What do we have here? We have in the first set of psukim, we have from pasuk dalet through yud aleph 4 to 11, a description of Goliath. We then have in pasuk yud bet through Tetvav, a description of David's side. And what you have here is you have Goliath's side and then David's side. Okay? The movie shifts scenes from one scene to another scene. This story, and what's going to happen at the end between these two characters? They're going to meet at some point, right? We'll see what happens then. They're going to meet. Sure. No, doesn't seem like it. Good question, doesn't seem like it. And we're going to have to talk about the previous parak and this parak and how they're interconnected. It's a big question. Okay, so good question. Now, Almost every single movie. Anybody here like rom-coms, romantic comedies, or it doesn't not even rom. Every single movie, every single story is based on this premise. You have person A, person B. Okay, they're leading separate lives. They're not directly connected to each other. Somehow, they run into each other, either by walking into each other at high school and their books fall, right? That's one way sometimes that it happens. Or they run into each other. It doesn't matter. This is, and then their lives get sort of tangled together and something happens as a result. Sometimes they fall in love. Sometimes, whatever. But this is the premise of so many different stories that we read, novels and books and movies, okay? And this is, it's the same structure here. There's David, there's Goliath. Okay? They're being described in very different ways. Goliath is a man of war. David is a shepherd harpist. Okay? Yeah, I mean, this contrast is being set up that, that you're going to have this big dude fighting against this little guy. David versus Goliath. Okay? And this is the story's already setting up this encounter. That David is a major, major underdog in this story. And we're going to see more about this, okay?
We didn't hear anything about Shaul's reaction.
Ah, interesting.
He's kind of missing
from this. Yafeh, who should have been the person who you think would fight Goliath? Who should fight Goliath? Israel's best warrior. Their biggest guy. Who's their biggest guy? Shaul. It's very possible that Shaul was supposed to be the one who said, fine, I'm going to fight against you, Goliath, right? But we don't hear from Shaul. And when someone comes and taunts you for 40 days straight, as he's doing to the Israeli camp, and there's no show of leadership, that's a major problem. Okay, you want to hear from your leaders. What do you have to say? Yeah?
God has really taken the leadership away from him.
Okay, so that's possible. Nachon? But he's still at the head of the camp, and he's still king. Shaul is still king. He did not know that David was appointing king. He did not know that David was appointing king. I really need to check into Parshat Yemei. I don't want to say something without justification here. I do wonder, and we'll see why in just a little bit. Actually, no. I take back that comment. Take back the comment. I'm gonna. We'll see. We'll see when we get later into the parak whether it's worth citing or not. But so this is what's happening here. We have a whole there is a vacuum of leadership in the Jewish camp, okay? Because no one's standing up to Goliath. Now, let's move on. So we get to good pasuk yud zayin. Vayomer Yishai le David beno, and Yishai says to David his son, Kach na lachachai fatakali azeh va'asara lachem azeh. So Yishai says to his son, take some bread, some food, and go to the camp, go to the army, the camp, right? The army needs food. We need to support them. These also bring some milk products of sorts to the general. And your brothers check out that they're doing okay. That arubatam tikach, I'm not sure what arubatam is. What language, what do you have for arubatam here? What word do they put in there? Eravon maybe? What do they put in? Any translation? Okay, Bekitsur has to take something else. Huh? He has to take something else and give it to his brothers. Okay, he's going to act as a messenger to his brothers, being sent by his father. Okay. Does that remind you of any story? A son being sent by his father to his brothers. Yosef. Ah, interesting. Yosef. Achav. Okay. We'll see whether that's, there's more to this. And they're all in Emek Ha'ilah fighting with the Plishtim. Vayashkem David Baboker. David gets up in the morning. Vayitoshet Aton Ala Shomer. He left the Tzon with his guard, with someone else. Vayisa Vayelach Kasher Tivau Yishai. He goes to the battlefield. He gets to the Magala is like the barricade. Okay. as the soldiers were sort of going out to war, he gets there. Now, it is possible that there were skirmishes between the Plishtim and the Jews. And then Goliath keeps saying, guys, let's just resolve this between me and someone else here. We don't need to keep having these fights. So David gets to the battlefront. And they drawn up battle lines, one facing the other. Vayitosh David atakanim me'alav vayar hashomer kelim vayarot hamaracha vayavol vayishal le'achav l'shalom. David gets to the battlefront, but he doesn't just stay at the camp that's behind. David goes to the front, the battle line itself, the front of the battle, and he's looking for his brothers. He's chatting with them. V'hinei isha b'naim ole Goliath ha'plishti shemo migat. And then this guy Goliath comes out. And what's he do? David. So Goliath's taunting the Jewish people again, but this time David happens to be there this time. V'chol ishal b'yirotam et ha'ish v'yanusu mipanav v'yir'u me'od. When they see him, they are in fear. And David sees the fear. V'yir'u me'od. V'yomar ish yisrael harayitem ma'ish ha'ole azeh. And the soldiers are saying to each other, have you seen this guy? How he comes and he taunts he's coming to taunt the Jewish people. And now the rumor's going around, what's going to happen if you kill Goliath? The king will give you what? Will give you his daughter. He'll make you, he'll enrich you. He'll give you his daughter. That Beit Aviv Yaseh Chofshi B'Yisrael, no taxes. Your house won't have to pay any taxes. Okay, that's a big deal. Okay, that's a big deal. It's a lot of money. So
on the news that is that Kahlon wants to populate the Golan, and one of the things that will be, tax rates.
Ah, interesting. Maybe we should move Shift Day to the Golan.
I think so.
Yeah? Yeah? So, so tax break, then and now. And but again, what do you think of Shaul? So this is, has Shaul come out to taunt Goliath? No. What do we get? We hear, if you go out and fight Goliath, he'll get a reward.
He's kind of bribing his men.
He's bribing his men? Has it worked so far?
No.
Hasn't worked so far. But there's certain weakness in that. Oh, we'll pay you some money if you go out and fight the. You'll get the king's daughter free of taxes. It's where's the king in here? Where is the king standing up for his people? It's a very weak proposal. Yeah. Well. I think, listen, in biblical times.
Men, right? Those people fighting would have had like sons and daughters that would have been married. They don't say you can have the king's son, they offer him the king's daughter.
I mean, in biblical times, a daughter was considered parents. It wasn't just pretty, it's to some form of property of the family. And listen, you still have this today. Kids, families in the Haredi world make the shidduch, right? It's not, the kid doesn't just go out and go on dates and meet people on Facebook and who knows what and then decide for themselves who they want to marry. This is done by the family. So all the more so the royal family. What?
Some kind of say.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, this is not this is how the British royal family used to be. Now, it's clear they make their own decisions.
All royal families used to be because... Yeah. Your girls were definitely like a chess piece in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's...
Marry your daughter off to this king or that king.
Correct, correct. There's a lot of strategy and politics involved in... And that was his form of diplomacy. Marrying women from other countries was his... this was how he built foreign... This is his foreign relations, the foreign ministry. That's how it functioned. In the time of Shaul. So no, but there is an idea. Listen, we live in a society where at a certain point you leave your parents' control and you're out in the world and you're an independent person. Someone was telling me last night that at 18, a parent has no access to their child's Maccabi file in Israel. At 18, you're free. At 18, a parent doesn't even have access to these things. I don't know if it's bad. It's, you know, partly because you're, you know, going to the army, etc. But this is back in biblical times. Either you're living at home with your folks, or you marry someone and you go to their home, right? There's no, I'm now living in an apartment in the Upper West Side of Manhattan or in Katamon or Tel Aviv. You're part of one family or another family. That's sort of the model.
Also, marriage is a kinyan. You buy the girl, so then she's a
chosid. Well, I don't know so much if she's bought, but 1 second, I'm just going to... But the parents definitely have control here, and all the more so the princess. Vayomer David el anashim ha'omdimi mo lemor. Maya selish asher yaketa plishti alaz, veisir cherpa me'al Yisrael. Kimia plishti ha'arel azaki cherev marachot Elohim chayim. So David says, what is the reward that the soldier is going to get if they kill this plishti? And remove this cherpa. What's cherpa? The shame for the Jewish people. Who is this plishti, this uncircumcised plishti? Ki cheref. He is denigrated. He is scorned. Marachot Elohim Chaim. The army of the living God. Okay? This is David HaMelech. This is David HaMelech just trying to get information. So they tell him, you can marry the king's daughter. So David is getting involved in this discussion. He's finding out information. He's already using pretty strong language, right? He's not talking about Goliath filled with fear. He's talking about him. He's just trash talking it back, right? He's dissing it out as well to this. This uncircumcised plishti. Now, Vayishma Eliav Achiv. David is involved in this discussion, and Eliav, his older brother, sees him. B'dabar l'anashim, v'yechar af Eliav b'David. He gets very angry. V'yomer lama ze yaradata, v'amina tashta me'at atzon ha'ina v'midbar, and yadati et zidon achat v'ro levavecha, k'daman ro'ot milchama yaradata. Wow. Eliav says to his brother, what are you doing here? What are you doing here at the war front? Who have you abandoned the tzon with? You're a shepherd. What are you doing here in the battlefield? Ani adati et zedonacha. I know your evil intentions. Ve'et ro'a levavecha. The evil in your heart. Ki leman ro'ot ha'milchama yarata. You came here just to see the war front. You came here to, you know, you want to see this. You want to see it, you know. It's like watching TV. You're just enjoying. You came here to enjoy, to be a spectator. You have no purpose being here.
He's putting him down.
Oh, tremendously.
But he knows that he's been anointed, right?
So it was in front of his brothers. The answer would appear to be yes. But again, this is a piece of information which we're still trying to figure out. How does it relate to this story? Because we're going to see at the end of the story, Maureen pointed out, at the end of the story, we're going to have a sort of a chronological problem arise. So, what does David respond? Vayomer David, me asiti ata. What have I done? What, come on, I haven't done anything wrong. Halo davarhu. I was only asking. I was only trying to find that information. What is happening here? Vayitzov me atzlo el mulacher. Vayomer kadavar hazeh. He turns to someone else. The guy says the same thing to him. You'll get the king. You know, person who. Kills Goliath, will get the king's daughter. And everyone's, they're all of the same mindset. There's a herd mentality. But you know, when David's talking here, people start, you know, listening, and they start passing on what he said, that he's insulting and scorning Goliath. Vayagidu livnei Shaul, vayikachehu. They hear that he's talking this way, so he gets brought before Shaul. Shaul's trying to find someone who's going to fight against Goliath, and David appears to be, a big talker. Vayomer David al Shaul, al yipole v'adam alav avdecha yelech v'nocham im haplishti hazeh. David says, don't be worried. Don't lose your courage, your heart. I'm going to go fight this plishti. Okay. Vayomer Shaul al David. Lo tuchal alecher ala plishti hazeh leilachem bo. You're not going to be able to fight this plishti. Ki na'ar ata. Luish milchama minu arav. You're a little boy, a youth. Or if anyone's seen my cousin Vinny, you're a youth. Okay. Luish milchama minu arav. And you are, and he's been fighting since he was a youth. He's a huge warrior. And he has tremendous military experience.
Hang on, so, Shaul does know him already because of...
Shaul does know him. Yeah, they're talking here. Okay, now, notice, again, David the underdog, his brother Eliav, come on, you're a shepherd, go home. Shaul, you have no fighting experience, you're a boy, you're a youth. Who do you think you are? So David responds, Ayomer David el Shaul, ro'eh haya evdecha le'aviv batzon. Well, you think that I'm just a pathetic, weak, feeble shepherd? I was a shepherd for my father, your servant. Uvah ari v'etado v'nasasema eder. And ari, a lion and a bear came to take one sheep from the flock. V'yatzati acharav. And I went after him. I saved the flock. Vayakom alai, the lion, I guess, jumped on me, attacked me. Vayachzakti bizkano, I pulled the lion's beard. Vihikitiv, and I hit him. Vahamitiv, and I killed him. Gam et ha'ari, v'gam ha'dov, hikav decha, I killed. Also the ari, the dove. Vaya plishti ha'arel, as this uncircumcised plishti, kechad mehem, will be just like this lion and bear that I killed. Ki cheref marachot elim chayim, because he has scorned and ridiculed the armies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? So, wow. You want to tell me I'm a shepherd? Yeah, I'm a shepherd, and I could kill a lion and a bear. And I don't know, have you guys ever seen lions or bears here in Ra'anana? Are there,
In pictures,
not recently. So there used to be lions. There used to be lions in Israel. I don't know if there are any more lions. Are there any more lions in Israel?
The Lion of Judah.
Maybe there's one lion lying around.
In the land park, there are a couple. But they they so flee, but
they come from South Africa.
Oh, really?
There are cats. There are wild cats.
There's some wild cats.
Oh, no lions.
Yeah.
Very few.
And bears? Anyone ever seen a bear in Israel?
In the zoo.
In the zoo. Yeah.
They sent him to be a shepherd because they didn't know who this redhead boy was. They didn't believe he was the father's son. And they sent him to be a shepherd so that the lions and the bears would be able to kill him.
Wait, who is...
David.
Oh, is this a... Okay. Oh, interesting. So that they'd be killed. Okay, this is... Okay. I thought you said the father and the son. I'm like, what is... Oh, interesting. Now, okay, that's not in the pshat that they sent him here. They sent him there to be killed. I mean, this seems like just something to be something he encountered, but that may be a midrash or something that he encounters, these problems. Now, but what's the parallel being made here between son and flock and... And the Jewish people, they're the flock. I want to protect the flock, the Jewish people, from the lion, from Goliath, right? So, and of course, there's a very beautiful piece in the Rambam's Laws of Kings where he describes the role of a Jewish king. And he says a Jewish king has to be like a ro'etzon, like a shepherd. A shepherd leading a flock Every single one is important. Nachon Moshe was Ru'at Zon, Avraham, Yitzchak, all of our great teachers were Ru'at Zon, because when you learn how to first take care of animals, then you could learn how to take care of people. Okay, there's some form of training in there. This is why it's valuable sometimes for kids to have, like, you know, dogs, right? Because not all pets. I mean, I don't know what you do with, like, an iguana or something. I don't think you learn much from an interaction with an iguana. But a dog, like, you learn how to take care of them and care for them and responsibility. Nachon, that's true. Nachon, you do have to feed. Nachon, you have to feed fish as well. So, actually, this is a real tangent. My next door neighbors once had a pet iguana. Okay, a big pet iguana. This story is not going to go well, I'm just telling you. And it got out of the house somehow. It was a big iguana in Teaneck, New Jersey, the middle of Jewish suburbia in New York. And they found it run over on the next street. It was run over by a car, unfortunately, you know. So, but that's what happens when you have a pet iguana. But other pets can be useful, you know, can be good for training children. So... and then you could learn to, you know, work with people. So that's the path that David, of course, is, you know, he goes through. So, so David says, "Vayomer David Hashem." And now he goes on. Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayomer David Hashem, Asher Hitzilani Miyad Ha'ari, Umiyad Adov Hu Yatzileini Miyad HaPlishti Hazeh. God who saved me from the Plishtim, and from the Dove, the Ari, and the Dove, He will save me from this guy as well. Wow, what emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is this overconfidence?
No.
No?
No? This is great emunah. Okay.
But also he probably feels Hashem with him because he has Ruach HaKadosh now.
Nachon. He feels correct. Correct. He feels Hashem is with him. It's very strong sense of emunah, God's presence in his life. Wow, so it's a pretty strong statement that he says to Shaul. So Shaul says, fine, Vayomer Shaul David Lech, Vashem Yeimach. Go, God should be with you. Vayabe Shaul et David Madav. So Shaul gives David his armor. Venatan Kovan Achoshet Arosho, Vayabe Shoto Shiryon. He gives him armor, he gives him his helmet. Vayachgor David et Charbo Me'al Lemadav. And he puts on his sword over, this is almost comical. He puts his sword, you know, out by, I don't know, by his belt or whatever it is, and he couldn't walk. So this little boy is not able to walk. I'm not experienced with armor. So David takes it off. So this is very symbolic. Very symbolic, because you have David with no armor versus Goliath, who has, I don't know, a tank full of armor. Okay. What does it mean that Shaul is putting the armor on David? There's some form of leadership here, right? The clothing makes the man, right? You could identify a general in war, a king, by the way he dresses, by what he wears. And so the fact that he's putting this on David, there's of course a irony here that David is going to be the next king, and who is handing him the kingdom, if you will, by giving him his clothing? Shaul is giving it to him. He's handing it to him. And what does David do? David says, "Not for me, not for me." And this is it shows his strength of character, his sense of identity, his self-confidence. He knows who he is and what he's about. No armor will help him. There's idea here of relying on HaKadosh Baruch Hu as opposed to relying on other military means. There's also this, and there's a certain naturalness to David, but we see here also that a leader, you know, the next person in line, you can't just be a copycat of the previous leader, okay? You have to find your own way. You have to know your own identity, okay? And this is David sort of saying, I'm my own guy. Okay, I'm not going to be like you. There's sort of this conversation going on, which is the subtext is, I'm not going to be like you, Shaul. I'm my own person. Okay, I'm going to have to follow my own, according to my own abilities. And this is an important theme in leadership, that a person doesn't just try to copy the previous leader, but they have to work with their own strengths and weaknesses as well.
Isn't it quite some sort of strategy? Sure. It's quite striking when Goliath is described.
He's
described as this immense person, and yet he has all this armor. So all he is immense. He doesn't actually have the source of strength that he needs. Because you're so imposing and big, and why do you have to gird yourself?
Well, what is the source of strength? What is the source of real strength, according to the story? That's a fundamental question. Okay, we've seen one answer, which is
armor. It's almost like he's revealing it from the outset, because however big and imposing he is, he still is somewhat afraid because he's got all of this.
Yafeh mod. Anyone read the beginning of this week's parasha, Parashat Shelach? This relates exactly to this week's parasha. I had a high school rebbe who used to say, whatever you're learning during the week, it's always connected to the parasha that you're going to read on Shabbat. And I think this is true as well. The Meraglim are told, go out and search out the land. Check out the cities. Habemachanim im bimivtsarim. Habemachanim, are the cities open without walls? Or are they mivtsarim? Are they walled cities? And Rashi points out there, what's the difference? Why does it matter? Walled cities, not walled cities. And he says, if they're walled cities, it means that they're actually weak because they need a wall to protect them. And if they're open cities, it means they're very strong, because they don't need a wall surrounding them to defend themselves. Okay? I'm going to use a modern example, which may be similar. Okay? And I don't want to get into the politics of this. I'm really just interested in this from a sort of a sociological, psychological perspective. Has anyone here ever been to, there's a yeshuv right next to Alon Shvut in the Gush. It's a bit of a hippie place. What's the name of it? I'm just telling. What's the name? No, not Tekoa, not Beitar. No. What's the name of it? No, not Itamar. That's in the Shomron. One second. Give me one second. No, not Elazar. Okay, wait, one second. Yeshuvei Gush Etzion. I'm going to have this in one second. It's not Batya, it's Batayin. Yes, Batayin. Batayin is right next to a Palestinian village. It is, there's a bunch of like American hippie dudes who hang out in Batayin. It's a very hippie place. People walk around without shoes on, peyot, singing, dancing, etc. It's a certain spirit to the place. And they don't have a wall around the yeshuv. And it's the only yeshuv in that area with no wall. They didn't have one during the Second Intifada. And I've heard some people say as follows, this is hearsay, that no terrorist would dare go into the yeshuv because they know that everyone there would respond in a furious manner and would just would they would they got no chance. You have no chance of killing a Jew there because everyone's ready to fight back. Whatever it is. Some form of that's the sort of the way it's spoken about. And what again, what's the idea? That sometimes you don't necessarily need defense. Defense can be a sign of weakness, not a sign of strength. So this is same idea here, and the same thing is true of Goliath. Goliath has all this armor, but, there may be some weaknesses that need to be exploited in the system, okay? So let's see what David does take with him. Pasuk Mem. So he doesn't take the sword, doesn't take the armor. Vayikach maklo biyado. He takes his maklo? It could be his staff, but it's actually something else. It's his sling, okay? Which is made out of a makel, a piece of wood. He takes five choice stones from the nachal, from the river. He puts it in his little shepherd's pocket where he would put his lunch. Okay? And this sling is in his hand. Vayigash el haplishti. And that's it. It's time to go to war. He goes to the plishti. Vayelech haplishti olech v'karev. So this is the story. We had Goliath's side, David's side. Now they're going to meet.
Why did Shaul let him go that easy? I mean, he kind of...
He wanted to go.
He
wanted to go. He wanted to go. He insisted on going. You know, you're not going to stop him from going.
Shaul never had leadership strength.
He loved him so much. He loved him so much.
He did deal with there's a war. There's you know, the Jewish people's lives are at stake. So what are you going to do? So okay. So we're going to stop here for a second because I want to go back to another point, and I want to talk about the contrast between and similarities between Yosef and his brothers, and David and his brothers. And we have a number of similarities between these two stories. What are the similarities?
Father sends
one son to go see the other brothers.
And he knows that the brothers are antagonistic.
Okay, the brothers are not at home. The brothers respond with antagonism, correct. What are other similarities? Who's being sent? Which son is being sent?
The youngest son,
Yosef and David. With food and provisions, what ultimately happens to the youngest son as a result of...
He becomes
the king. Okay, so in each situation it leads to becoming the king. Furthermore, both David and Yosef are described as Yefei Mar'eh. They're good looking. They also, not only do they become the king, but they marry the king's daughter, fine. I don't know if it's not clear that Yosef married the king's daughter, but he married, you know, a princess of sorts. Also, both of them are stripped of their clothing. Okay, David takes off the armor. Okay, and Yosef is stripped of his clothing in the jail. Both of them obviously have tremendous ambition. They're going to go very far. What else? Okay.
Now, took his coat with many colors.
Yeah, Nachon. Okay, Nachon. So what is the what's the meaning of this similarity? Or what might be the difference between them?
Seriously, I don't know if they're driven by ambition. They just have integrity and work hard.
Okay, but they are people.
They have the...
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I didn't mean it in a negative sense, but they're people with great vision. People who are going to go far in life. You know those high school friends, you know this person's going somewhere, right? They had that sense about them. This person, what's...
They're not in my school.
Not in your school. So you had a sense that people were gonna go somewhere in life. Sometimes you meet someone like, that person's going somewhere. Okay, so similarly here. What is the difference between these two stories? First of all, how does Yosef, you know, his brothers don't like him, but Yosef also is a bit of an instigator. He's a little bit of a he's about to say Diba. He tells on them a little bit.
But David does also, because he also tells them about his dreams, and David tells them about these like almost apocryphal stories about him saying like...
That was to Shaul. That was specifically to Shaul. It wasn't to his brothers.
Right.
In fact, when his brother Eliav attacks him, he says like, "What have I done?" So he doesn't seem to respond with the same antagonism to his brothers that... He's not necessarily responsible for this in the way that Yosef might be. Listen, Yosef's brothers did a terrible thing, but we could all agree Yosef didn't help so much. Yosef, you know, he didn't help himself in this situation.
And he was vain.
Yeah, he's a little bit vain. Nachon,
Nachon,
correct.
He's also vain, saying, I saved
the
sheep and the lions.
No, but he was vain physically.
But he says it was Hashem. Hashem, Asher Yatzilein. You know, so maybe it's now, another difference between them, and Rav Amnon Bazak points out very interestingly enough, both David and Yosef always speak about the importance, the role of Hashem in their own lives. Right? When Yosef is standing before Paro, how many times does he say, "You think I'm going to interpret the dreams? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to interpret the dreams. It's Hashem. It's all Hashem. The plan, 7 years, famine, Hashem's plan. Interpretation, Hashem." He's always invoking God's name, even to his brothers. How does he sort of reveal to them that he is Yosef? He keeps saying, Hai Elokim, etc. David also is always talking about Hashem. Hashem, Asher Yatzileni, Miyada Plishti, Azehu Yatzil, right? both of them invoke God's name all the time. But there is one difference. And that is that Yosef only invokes Hashem's name after he's already thrown into the prison and he's gone through some form of a crisis. Then he realizes Hashem in his life. And he realizes he needs to seek out and invoke Hashem's name. David, already from the very beginning, has this sense of emunah. From the beginning. The way he's talking now, before he becomes king. This is who he was from a very young age. The sense of emunah was integral, is an integral part of his personality and his identity. Whereas Yosef, he sort of comes to it a little bit later. There's a certain vanity in the beginning, a certain self admiration, a certain obsession with himself or somewhat self-absorbed. Whereas David, he's like this throughout his life, and that's one of the differences between them. So it's an interesting contrast.
Sorry, yeah. David already started writing Tehillim?
Sefer Tehillim. Unclear. Unclear. We have no indication. I imagine he did. I imagine that a lot of his poetry was inspired by being out as a roet zon in the fields, right? There's as much, he's always bringing in geographic imagery and pastoral, imagery from the field and from the rain and from nature. I imagine he was inspired by this. I imagine he started out at a young age. But we don't have anything published at this point. We don't have any of his notes, right?
Even his speech here sounds like you're listening to when he's talking about how he's saying.
Yafemot, good. There's a certain smoothness of language, his ability to articulate. He has the power of speech. Certainly, David is a powerful speaker, okay, who draws attention to himself through this, not necessarily in a negative sense, but he, okay. So what happens? I don't want to, what time is it now? Okay, let me just see if there's anything else that I wanted to get through today. I want to leave the encounter for next week. 1 second. Okay. Okay, now just one more interesting point. Now, when David, it's just interesting to think about, was David interested in the prize? You know, when David's inquiring, what's going to happen to the person who wins? So, some commentators, Rabag, for example, points out that, David sort of realizes this is how he could become king, if he were to marry the king's daughter. But other positions say, David was just astonished, that this is, he's sort of saying, why is there even a need for a prize? This guy is scorning the Jewish people. Well, you need a prize in order to stand up against this, right? And this is an interesting educational point. Do we, and also I'll say even on an adult level, not just with kids, how do we inspire people or encourage or educate people to do things? Do we say, do things, it's the right thing to do, right? Eat your food because you should eat your food, eat your dinner. Take a bath so that you can be clean. There are many things we ask our kids to do. Do we ask them to do them because it's the thing to do? Or do we say, well, I'll give you a sticker if you go and eat your dinner. Or I'll give you a present if you stop crying now. Or if you keep screaming, I'll give you more apple juice and more cookies and more snacks. Right? Do we motivate through alternative means or through the thing itself? And what we see by David is David is saying, who needs a prize for this? You need a prize to be motivated to stand up for Am Yisrael? No, you shouldn't need a prize or reward for this. You should just be so strongly rooted in your values that you should feel the need to stand up for Am Yisrael because that's what we do. These are our values. And that's sort of the difference between Shaul and David. Shaul is looking for someone, who wants a reward, and David is saying, who needs a reward here? This is about a matter of principle. The same thing is true sometimes on a congregational level. Okay, how do we motivate people to come to events and to participate in shul? Do we give them pizza? Do we, you know, how many? No, seriously, do we do more events that are, you know, sort of exciting and fun events, but not necessarily Torah-oriented events in order to get people in the door? Or you say, listen, there's shirim, there's tefillah, there's chesed. Come for those core things. These are things that we talk about all the time on the, you know, educationally, and these are things that we find challenging on a national level and on a personal level. So David, though, we see is motivated by the right reasons, and next week, we got a little bit of a cliffhanger. What's going to happen between David and Goliath? What's going to happen next? Is this a rom-com? Are they going to fall in love? Are they going to fight? Who knows what's going to happen? You'll have to come back next week to hear. Okay, kol tov, and yisher koach. Okay.